Christy, and welcome to another episode of Kid Lit Coffee Break. I'm going to take a bit of a side road in today's reading and venture into a young adult novel. The book I'm reading from today is Betsy Was a Junior by Maud Hart Lovelace. This is one of the books from the Betsy Tacy series, and I love these books. They take place in the early 1900s, this particular book is set in 1910, and they chronicle the adventures of Betsy and Tacy as they go through high school. I was always amazed at how similar Betsy and Tacy and their crowd were to my friends and me in high school. But there were also things that completely mystified me, like shirtwaists and starched collars and pompadours, and the fact that cars were completely new and exciting to these kids. They called them automobiles. In this book, as the title already gave away, Betsy and Tacy, along with their friend Tib, are in their junior year at Deep Valley High School in Deep Valley, Minnesota. This excerpt is from the first chapter entitled Taking Stock. Betsy Ray sat in a rowboat which was anchored in Babcock's Bay, 2 watery miles opposite Murmuring Lake Inn, where the Ray family had been spending the summer. The oars were folded across the boat, and on the seat beside her lay a fat notebook, which she used as a journal, and several sharply pointed pencils. She sat with her arms bound about her knees, staring at a gauzy-winged dragonfly which had come to rest on the boat. Her expression was serious, not to say grim. She was taking stock. Betsy was fond of this bay. It was strewn thickly with water lilies. Their flat green pads and creamy, richly scented blossoms floated on the water all around her. The shore was lined with trees, willows, cottonwoods, box elders. In other parts of the lake, rows of summer cottages or low-lying farms came to the water's edge. This cove was remote. Moored here, you might have thought that you were in a wilderness, except for the fact that a green wooded point, jutting into the lake to the east, showed the rooftop of the inn. When Betsy wished to achieve the illusion of wilderness, she did not look in that direction. Murmuring Lake was a highly social place. Crowds of young people followed a careless routine, walks, boat rides, and leisurely games of croquet, bathing every afternoon at 4. Mothers rocked, read and embroidered on the shady porches, and vacationing fathers fished. Mr. Ray drove out from his shoe store in nearby Deep Valley every night, and in the evening there were launch rides and informal hops in the big parlor. Betsy had had a gay summer. She was sorry it was ending tomorrow. She wondered now, staring at the dragonfly, and beyond him across the glassy lake, whether it had been too gay, but she decided that it hadn't been. "It's been wonderful," she thought. "It's just the sort of summer you ought to have at 16. Betsy was 16, and the next month she would begin her 3rd year of high school. She was exactly halfway through, which made this an excellent time for taking stock. "I wish I was just beginning and had it all ahead of me," she said with a long, romantic sigh. But she said it because she thought it was the proper thing to say. She was really pleased to be an upperclassman. She had certainly had fun. She belonged to a flexible crowd of 12 or so boys and girls who stirred up fun as briskly as the cook at the inn stirred up hot cakes for breakfast. She had really been too frivolous, Betsy decided. Yet the 2 years had had their perplexities, too, and their worries, and even their heartaches. She had had heartaches over boys, over wanting to be popular. The Ray house, with its 3 daughters, was always full of boys, but boys liked Betsy usually in a friendly sort of way. She had longed to be a siren like her older sister, Julia. In particular, during her freshman year, she had had a heartache over Tony. Although a classmate, he was slightly older, more sophisticated than the rest. He had a bush of curly black hair, bold laughing eyes, a lazy drawling voice. Betsy had thought she was in love with him, but he had only liked her in a maddening, brotherly way. By the end of the year, however, her infatuation had ebbed away. She liked Tony still, almost better than any boy she knew, but now her feeling was as sisterly as his was brotherly. "That's life for you," Betsy said aloud, and appropriately the dragonfly flew away. In her freshman year, too, she had had a heartache over losing the essay contest. Every year, the 2 societies into which the school was divided competed for a cup in essay writing. Both years, Betsy had been chosen to represent her class, and both years she had lost to Joe Willard. He was an orphan who was working his way through school. Betsy liked him very much, but she didn't like losing the essay contest. She had minded it most the 1st year, for then she had felt guilty. She had not prepared for the contest properly. She had not read the material she was supposed to have read. One of the great lessons she had learned in high school had come after that defeat. She had learned that her gift for writing was important to her, and that she must never neglect it. "I haven't really neglected it since," she thought. "I've kept up my journal, and I'm writing a novel. I worked hard on my English assignments last year, and I studied for the essay contest. I lost it again, but this time it wasn't through any fault of mine." She had not done her best because, by an ironical chance, the contest had coincided with a quarrel she had had with Phil Brandish. Phil Brandish had been the great outstanding triumph of Betsy's sophomore year. She had tried that year to acquire a new personality, to act dramatic and mysterious, and in this role she had captured Phil Brandish's interest. but she had not enjoyed pretending all the time to be something she wasn't. She decided before the season ended that she preferred, usually, just to be herself. "I learned a lot from that affair, though," she thought now, frowning. "I've had more poise with boys since then. Julia says I'm more charming. Of course, I didn't keep Phil, but then I didn't want to." He was a sulky, aloof boy whose chief charm had been a red automobile. He and his twin, Phyllis, were grandchildren of the rich Home Brandish, who lived in a mansion on the west side of Deep Valley. Phyllis went to boarding school, Browner Seminary in Milwaukee. By coincidence, this school was attended by a great friend of Betsy's, Thelma Mueller, irrevocably nicknamed Tib. Betsy's oldest and closest friend was red-haired Tacy Kelly. They had been loyal, loving chums since Betsy's fifth birthday party, and they had been friends with Tib almost as long as they had been friends with each other. Tib was tiny, yellow-headed, and as daring as she was pretty. Betsy and Tacy loved to think up adventurous things to do, but it had usually been Tib who did them. She had lived in a large, chocolate-colored house. She could dance. She had exquisite clothes. Even when she was their daily companion, Tib had been a figure of romance to Betsy and Tacy. And when they were all in the eighth grade, she had moved away to Milwaukee. Last year, Betsy had gone to spend Christmas with her. The visit to the big, foreign-flavored city, the glimpse into Tib's life, its sheltered private school, its encircling gross papas and gross mamas, uncles, aunts, and cousins, had been an illuminating experience. It was while visiting there that Betsy had decided to become dramatic and mysterious. The visit had had a thrilling ending, for on New Year's Eve, Tib had told her that the family might move back to Deep Valley. "I wonder whether she really will come some day," Betsy thought. A breeze had sprung up, ruffling the water and bringing a faint, not unpleasantly fishy smell. The boat rocked dreamily. Betsy roused herself, reached for her journal. Wetting her pencil with the tip of her tongue, she began to write. "I'm going to make my junior year just perfect," she wrote. "In the first place, I'm going to stay around home a lot. Julie's going off to the university, and Papa and Mama and Margaret will all miss her terribly, almost as much as I will." It wasn't that Julia had ever helped much around the house, Betsy thought, lowering her pencil. Anna, the Rays' hired girl, was so efficient that there wasn't much need for any of the daughters to help. But Julia was so loving and vital. Her personality filled the house just as her music did. Julia planned to be an opera singer and was playing and singing all day long. She played popular music, too, for the crowd to sing. "I resolve next," Betsy continued writing, "to learn to play the piano. The family has always wanted me to take piano lessons, and I've always dodged them. But with Julia going, I'll just have to learn. I can't imagine our house without music. I'll start taking lessons and practice an hour every day if it kills me. It probably will. In school," she went on, "I want my year to be completely wonderful. I hope I'll be elected a class officer again, and I'd like to head up a committee for the junior-senior banquet. That's the most important event of the junior year. And above all, I want another try at the essay contest. I want that terribly. I think I'll have it, too. And I'm really going to study. I'm going to try to get good marks. I've never done my best." She read over what she had written, suffused by a warm, virtuous glow. "As for boys," Betsy concluded, and her writing grew very firm and black, "I think I'll go with Joe Willard." She emphasized this declaration with an exclamation point and some heavy underlining, which was fitting. It was really the keystone of the structure she had built. Unconsciously, perhaps, she figured out just what kind of girl she thought Joe Willard would like, and that was the kind she was planning to be. He didn't have money to spend on girls. He couldn't afford frivolity. When he started going around with a girl, she would surely be the kind Betsy had just described, one who was devoted to her home, who gave her spare time to some worthwhile thing like music, a leader in school. But it would take planning to go with him, no matter how admirable she made herself. Unfortunately, Joe Willard didn't seem to want girls in his life. It was because of his shortage of money, Betsy felt sure. "But I can make him see that money doesn't matter," she planned. "I'll just have to lure him up to the house. Once a boy came to the merry, hospitable Ray house, he almost always came again." It was pleasant to sit in a gently rocking boat, listening to Kildee's on the shore and thinking about going with Joe Willard. Betsy had liked him for several years now. She had met him the summer before she entered high school, in the little hamlet of Butternut Center where he was clerking in his uncle's store. She was on her way home, after visiting on a farm, and he had sold her some presents to take home to her family and Tacy. During the 2 years of high school, a series of small misunderstandings had kept them apart, but he liked her, Betsy felt sure, just as she liked him. Not in a silly way, she thought. We're just going to be wonderful, wonderful friends. For the present, that is, she added hastily. She was quite aware that it would be so easy to be romantic about Joe Willard. He was so extremely good-looking, with light hair cut in a pompadour and blue eyes under thick golden brows. His red lower lip protruded recklessly. He was not downed by the fact that he had no home, no parents, and very little money. He'll have more money this year, Betsy thought. He had planned, she knew, to work with a threshing rig all summer, following the harvest northward. He had expected to earn $3 a day and save it for his expenses during the coming year. "I suppose he'll work after school at the creamery again. That won't matter. He'll be able to come to see me sometimes, and we'll talk by the hour. How he'll love Papa's Sunday night lunches and the way Mama plays for us to dance." She sat still for a moment, smiling at the distant chimney of the inn, as though it were Joe Willard. When she smiled, Betsy's face lighted with a charm of which she was quite unaware. She didn't like her square white teeth, which were, in her own phrase, parted in the middle. But her smile, quick and very bright, gave a hint of her response to life which was trusting and joyful. She was a tall, slender girl with soft brown hair worn in a pompadour over a jimmy. It was wavy now, but only because it had been wound the night before on magic wavers. She had dark-lashed hazel eyes and pink and white skin. This she prized mightily. It was, she considered, her only claim to beauty, and Betsy worshipped beauty. If a fairy godmother had ever appeared in her vicinity waving a wand and offering favors, Betsy would have cried out unhesitatingly for beauty. Her favorite daydream was of suddenly becoming beautiful, with bright hair streaming down, like the lily maids of Astolat's or dark raven tresses. The members of her crowd sometimes exchanged trade lasts, TLs they were called. A trade last was a compliment, heard about another person, repeated to him after he had first repeated a compliment heard about you. Betsy was always being told for a TL that she had been described as interesting, sweet, or charming. It infuriated her. "I want to be pretty," she stormed to Tacey. "You're better than pretty," Tacey answered sometimes, and Betsy would respond inelegantly, "Pooh for that." After smiling for a long time at the chimney, which was masquerading as Joe Willard, she slapped her notebook shut, put it back on the seat, and took up the oars. Instinct told her it was almost 4 o'clock. Betsy often rowed over to Babcock's Bay in the early afternoon, which was nap time at the end. She liked to be alone sometimes to read, write on her novel, or just think, but she always got back for the bathing. Slipping the oars into the water, she turned the boat about. She rowed unskillfully, her oars churned up showers of glittering drops, but she sent the heavy boat hurrying over the water. Betsy was a Junior, is copyright 1947 by Maud Hart Lovelace.